Chapter 11. Blake carefully settled Eddie down into a maintenance bay, paying close attention to the hand signals of the mechanic as she backed the damaged machine up. She could complete the task herself with her rear monitors, but protocol dictated that in the garage, the mechanic's word was law. How ludicrous, she thought, that we're still strict about this when the world is crumbling around us. She looked at the clock mounted on her cockpit, where hands illuminated by tritium ticked away softly. It was 04:37. The sun would be coming up soon. And up until last night, I probably would have agreed with them. With one final step, the Toro-class heavy mech locked into place, accompanied by several loud clunks as clamps engaged about Edwina Blake's machine. As soon as the maintenance bay connected, control of Eddie was wrenched from her and the neural uplink was severed. The persistent notes of her machine powered down with a whine of fading turbines, and she was left in silence. Blake felt like an amputee. Phantom pain from the huge mechanical body that wasn't hers anymore ached, and all of a sudden she was vulnerable, convinced that something terrible was about to happen. She felt diminished. That is also ludicrous, she thought. The terrible thing has already happened. She sat there for an age, listening to the distant sounds of mechanics clambering over her armored chassis, listening to the squadnet as Sergeant Kronig took a grip of essential admin in the manner of senior NCOs, and listening to the sound of her breathing. The echo of disconnection faded away and left a void in its wake. The captain was numb. A labored clunk of heavy metal being levered, then blinding light stabbed into the gloomy sanctuary of her control pit, offensive in its intensity. Blake shielded her eyes with one hand and scowled at the offender, a district tech that she had never seen before. The light was partially blocked as the silhouette of his shaved head dropped through the hatch upside down. The man blinked several times, his eyes adjusting to the dark before he spotted the officer, then cleared his throat and spoke. "Captain Blake," he said, fatigue seeping from every syllable. "Major Thompson would like to see you on the deck, ma'am." Blake just nodded her head, before shutting down the control pit and climbing from her command couch. "Do you mind?" she said, gesturing to where her waste disposal unit linked into her jacksuit. The young tech looked away in embarrassment with a "sorry, ma'am," as he left. Blake detached her gear and stood up, accompanied by a cracking of weary joints, protesting after many hours of relative inactivity. She never felt so old. The garage floor was huge. Like the one in Sector 78, it had separate bays for each power suit and mech, organized in uniform lines across the plain concrete floor. Like Sector 78, techs bustled back and forth, collecting and using tools mounted inside cages that lined the outer walls of the complex. But that's where the similarities ended. Sector 78's leg garage wasn't half the size of this space. Sector 78 didn't have bloodstains and worse dotted over the floor, didn't have a makeshift triage station in one corner because there were too many casualties to fit into the med center. Kinney had never seen the techs move with as much purpose as the ones at District HQ, and never would. And he had never seen Sector 78 so empty. Apart from the QRF platoon, a mere two squads and one heavy Touro, there were no other machines occupying the space. The few mechanics present waited impatiently for the platoon to dismount so they could get to work, harried looks on lined faces. Kinney felt annoyed at their annoyance. They hadn't even been outside the walls this whole time. Something rumbled outside, louder than the constant dull reverb of the battle for the wall, and Kinney felt his heart leap into his mouth. "Not already," he thought to himself. "We've only just got here." "Kinney, are you deaf?" He looked confused before realizing the voice emitting from his radio was talking to him. "Say again, Sergeant. My systems are a bit fried." Kronig repeated himself without hesitation. "I said, take your mog to Bay 13, with a metal gauntlet pointing in the required direction. "Prioritize ammunition and mechanical repairs, then shield recharging. Once the techs have had a look at 841, back brief me on your repair time."
"Roger that, Sarge," Kinney replied before shuffling over to the bay in question. He turned round and backed his mog into the docking clamps, then cycled the standard eject procedure. Light slowly spilled into the coffin of his power suit as the hydraulic rams extended, pushing his cockpit plating up and away. The thigh sheave split to the sides, and Kinney manually released each strap of his harness with an economy of motion, led more by tiredness than efficiency. Reaching up to disconnect his cerebral jack, Kinney undid the safety clamp and yanked it out with one motion. Feeling the blessed release of disconnection, he let out a breath he didn't know he'd been holding and stepped down from the suit, being mindful not to slip on the assorted muck that had accumulated on the access step. At the same time as feeling though a massive burden had been lifted from your shoulders, MOG disconnection made you fuzzy for a while as the body adapted to normality. Neurons were firing at stimulus no longer present, and it felt like having pins and needles jabbing over your entire body. Unable to think of anywhere else to go at that precise moment, Kinney simply sank to the floor, resting his back against leg armor that was encrusted with mud and gore. A wave of emotion swept over him. Not sadness, not elation, maybe relief. Kinney couldn't tell, but he just sat there and rested his arms on his knees, looking at his hands for a moment. They were shaking. A fairly normal response when one is coming down from a dose of combat stims. Yeah, keep telling yourself that. Usually rectified by a decent night's sleep. Yep. He pulled his gloves off and stowed them in a cargo pocket on his suit. Purely busy work. Anything so he didn't have to be reminded of his human frailty. Another distant boom, and a spike of fear unlike anything Kinney had ever felt shot through him like a lightning bolt, only to fade just as fast. That was new. It wasn't a fear of anticipation, no. That had been replaced. The new feeling was one of knowing what was going on out there, of having experienced something terrible that he couldn't quite articulate. Kinney didn't know whether he was bothered more by the intensity of the fear, or by how quickly it disappeared. He took comfort in the fact that he was still bothered by it at all. "You just gonna sit there all day, buddy?" Kinney looked up into the face of a tech who loomed over him in oil-stained coveralls. The man had the look of someone who had a job to do, and doing it was the only thing that helped him make sense of what was going on. "Sorry, man. It's been a long night," Kinney replied. "I'll get out of your way." "Yeah, it's been a long night for everyone," the mechanic said dismissively. "Just go over there with your buddies and chill out for a bit. I'll give you a shout when the diagnostics have run." Kinney felt a spike of anger at the tech's casual dismissal of the platoon's nightmare of an evening, but he was too tired to bother calling him on it. The man reached out a hand, which Kinney took, and pulled him to his feet. Kinney nodded his thanks and wandered over to where the rest of his comrades were. They had found a stack of ammo crates and were sitting or leaning in small groups, wearing a variety of expressions. Braga and Markovic sat next to each other, staring blankly into space. The veteran troopers did not acknowledge each other, merely taking comfort in the proximity as they chain-smoked cigarettes and looked at nothing. The majority of Second Squad huddled around Marante like children around their mother, and she spoke to them in quiet tones, an intensity to her voice that was matched by the look in her eyes. Her squad looked confident, good to go. The final pair were Machado and Victoria, who sat together and simply cried. They had arguably been hit the hardest, having three of their squad killed in the most helpless of situations. They were younger than the stoic veterans. Despite having exactly the same amount of combat experience, they were from the same generation as Kinney and therefore less restrained with their emotions. Reynolf wanted to go over and join them in their grief. It looked cathartic, then saw Kronig and just stopped. The sergeant was briefing his assigned tech, growling at the man and gesturing with swift chops of his artificial hand, pointing out problem areas of D99, no doubt. The old man had dark circles under his eyes from lack of sleep, but otherwise looked utterly unaffected by the night of battle. Kinney shook his head, suppressing a humorless laugh. "Just let the man do his job," he thought as he looked at the bewildered tech, before looking back to the young pair of troopers. It seemed he had interrupted his own train of thought. He didn't feel like sharing his emotions anymore. It seemed unnecessary. Instead, he found a crate by itself and just sat down, watching the crippled form of Eddie as the technical team of District HQ swarmed over it. Blake already knew Major Thompson. He was an advisor to Brigadier Levine, wherever the hells he is, and a competent staff officer. What he wasn't, however, was commander of district, or anything else for that matter. Blake wondered why he was meeting her here on the garage floor. Hello, Edwina, he opened with a polite nod. James, she responded curtly. May I ask why I'm here and not in the ops room? James Thompson was of Kronig's generation and was very much like him, being a veteran of the Troubles except for, in Blake's opinion, where it mattered. A lifetime as an NCO had made Kronig hard and unflinching, while rank had softened Thompson. It had taken his edge off, physically as well as mentally, if his rotund physique was anything to go by. This made him a lot easier to deal with as an officer, though he still had an air of danger about him sometimes, especially if one disagreed with him. He had settled into his rank, as many a major did over their long careers. Accepting that there were so few colonel positions to promote into, like most, he would stay at that level forever. However, this didn't mean he was incompetent, simply unremarkable, much like how Blake viewed herself. Of course, he replied to her, lips pulled tight, disguising a grimace. We're meeting here because district hierarchy are dead, and I'm all that's left. He turned his grimace into a full smile that didn't reach his eyes. I don't want to alarm the junior officers with that little tidbit, you see. Blake nodded, surprisingly unsurprised by the news. Did you receive an order to move the Brigadier to Central once the radio interference had cleared? Blake inquired, already certain of the reply. Indeed, Thompson responded grimly. A very specific order, instructing not only the boss but his entire command to go with him, with a token bodyguard. Important business they had to discuss, so I'm told. He left me in charge, not heard a peep since. Blake nodded, absorbing the information. And what makes you believe they're all dead? Well, I recently re-established comms with Central Command, as well as the other districts. Central insists they never sent the order, and the districts insist they did. Nobody has seen hide nor hair of our commanders for hours. Blake remained unmoved. They had been consistently sucker-punched again and again during the course of the evening, and she was strangely vindicated by the knowledge. It wasn't just her that got torn apart tonight. Others shared her massive misfortune. Where's Rome? The large man asked. I take it he met the same fate? No, Blake responded quietly. We got the same order, but we never got the chance to carry it out. I saw him die, she said matter-of-factly. He was assassinated by one of my hunters, the same one who sabotaged the base reactor. We saw that, Thompson said, nodding gravely. Lit up the sky for miles. Thought you'd all been vaporized, truth be told. Blake raised her brows and sighed. Well, most of us were, and that bastard is still out there. He saved my life just now, but he's hunting us. I think he's made a game out of it. You may want to warn your men. The old man shook his head emphatically, jowls wobbling a tad. If he comes for us, so be it. The fort will take him down without effort. We can't afford the loss of morale at this time. Not when we're on the cusp of our first victory, you see. Wait, victory? The force they had witnessed attacking the base had seemed all but unstoppable from the outside. Blake had fully expected to be sent straight to the walls to reinforce. What do you mean? She asked. I'm struggling to see anything victorious from our current position. This time Thompson gave a real smile, restrained as it was. Well, you see, those rebel bunch couldn't organise a piss-up in a brewery. Eat 'em, curse their names. And they've got nothing in reserve. They're damn fools, they've been throwing themselves at the wall all night. And we believe they've just about run out of momentum. Thompson looked quite pleased with this appraisal, regardless of its authenticity. Blake remained sceptical. That contradicts the extremely well-coordinated strikes conducted against power systems, not to mention the assassination of not only our great leader, but also most of our upper chain of command. Thompson flashed. There was something in his eye for the shortest moment before he replied. I was getting to that. We have been gathering information all day. In all the chaos, it's been like fishing at night in a sewer with no bait, but we believe we're beginning to catch all the pieces. Get on with it, Blake thought, frowning. We, I should say the tech officers and I, think they had outside help. Rogue army units? Possibly, but I was thinking more along the lines of the off-world variety. That made sense. We saw multiple drop pods land in the necropolis on the way here. I had planned to brief you properly. Yes, we've heard much the same from other units that reached us, which, as you can see, he cast a glance around the practically abandoned garage complex, have been few and far between. That particular fact was cause for concern, regardless of whatever made-up victories were about to be won. "What are our current numbers?" Blake asked. Thompson responded as if on autopilot, the words flying out of him like he'd been over the facts 1,000 times. Being the acting commander of a district that oversaw thousands of soldiers in hundreds of units, sorting through the mess to get a handle of logistics was probably all he'd been doing all night. "Sector 70 turned traitor, along with 72. They're out there somewhere, without command, working as independent warbands alongside the Corvids. Sector 69 went rogue, taking the war into their own hands. They ceased communications after vowing to rid Solo Nobre of the separatist threat. 3 entire sectors hadn't even attempted to conform to some kind of larger loyalist plan." Blake was slightly shocked by this. The thought stopped her in her tracks. "When did I start referring to friendlies as loyalists? It's the troubles all over again." "Sectors 75 and 73 were wiped out. 75 was steamrolled by the same force that's beating at the door as we speak. 76 tried to make it here, but were killed to a man in the process." Thompson looked her directly in the eye, breaking his recital. "Listening to them die was nothing, I'd like to repeat." He sighed deeply, before continuing. "We thought the same of you, before you turned up and politely knocked." He looked around, seeming to lose his focus. "Let's see. That leaves 71, 74 and 77, who all made it here at roughly 50% strength. Blake absorbed the information. She didn't need to be told exact numbers. Looking at the vast emptiness of the garage complex once more extrapolated all she needed. "This attack," she started. "It'll break, but you won't be able to hold off another, will you?" She didn't phrase it as a question. Thompson shook his head. Another fact he had kept from his subordinates, no doubt. This guy was old school to the core, and Blake felt a sense of liberation in her newfound role as a combat leader. She wasn't like these people, her so-called peers, and she embraced it. "It must be what the old-timer must have felt like in his day." "I can see why he liked you," he said out of the blue, to which Blake screwed up her face. "But," he went on, "we hopefully won't have to hold off another attack."
"Saints be praised! You're here to answer my prayers!"
He shouted the last sentence unnervingly. Blake wondered what the hells he was on about, but he didn't leave her waiting. Thompson leaned in conspiratorially, eyes darting behind Blake to look at her troops, as though they had suddenly developed the ability or desire to hear him from several hundred yards away. "I've got a mission for you. Secret stuff, terribly vital to the war effort. Come with me and I'll tell you more, while your troops rearm." A mission? She definitely was questioning this time. "If you want us to go back out there, we need to be armed properly. We need a full refit." "Of course, of course," Thompson waved dismissively. "We've got weapons and ammo for weeks, just no bodies to hang them from." With that, the Major gestured for her to lead him out of the complex, then stopped mid-arm sweep.
"What the hells? I thought you were dead!"
Major Thompson yelled across the open space, and Sergeant Jack Kronig looked up from a diagnostic chart. His face lit up with recognition.
"I'm surprised you could see me from over there, old man."
Thompson barked. "I'm a year younger than you, Grandad." Kronig came bounding over, before slapping wrist to wrist with the Major in a warrior's handshake. The sergeant didn't salute, didn't even acknowledge his commander as he bit back at an old comrade.
"Damn, you got fat."
Thompson looked at Kronig in his sweaty jacksuit, with its black chevrons on one shoulder denoting his rank. "And you got nothing, you useless old sod." They both laughed, big guffaws at something that was obviously hilarious to them. Blake was confused. She'd never seen either man act like this before. It was as though rank meant nothing to them, and they had relapsed into some earlier versions of themselves. Edwina stood uncomfortably, waiting for their laughter to die down, before Major Thompson gestured to the sergeant's stripes again. "They really meant it, didn't they?" Jack looked at his own arm, as though only just becoming aware of some crucial fact.
"Yep, they definitely did, Major. The bastards."
"Bastards," Thompson echoed. "Well, we'll catch up later, mate. But now I've got to go and do some boring officer stuff with Captain Blake here."
"Roger that, sir,"
Kronig said sarcastically, before throwing the slickest salute Blake had ever seen. Thompson sloppily waved his arm in an approximation of the same thing, before turning back to the captain. "Shall we?" he gestured with his arm once more. "I think we should, James." As they turned to leave, Kronig shouted over his shoulder.
"I'm raiding your armory, by the way. You still got the old gear."
"What do you think?" Thompson deadpanned.
"Nice one, Tomo. They won't know what hit 'em."
Blake shook her head at the spectacle she'd just witnessed, before pushing through the double swing doors leading away from the maintenance bays. "That was weird." Kinney watched the slat windows, mounted high in the garage walls. They were too high to afford a view of anything outside, being designed simply to let natural light into the gloomy complex during the day, but Kinney enjoyed watching the sky brighten. He was focusing on trying to name the shades as they slowly brightened. It was hard to make out. The powerful strip lights inside the complex tended to wash everything out, but the sky had gone from black to grey through a bizarre wash of purples to settle into a warm orange. He'd once read that several of the original colony ships had crashed hard enough to go nuclear, and that the detonations permanently changed the colour of the sky. The young private wondered how much the sky had changed tonight, based on the huge amounts of ordnance expended, and how much crap they must have kicked into the atmosphere. "Are you holding up, Ulf?" said Mirante, and Kinney jumped. He looked down into his calloused palms, noticing how the dirt and sweat from inside his gloves had ingrained itself into the skin. "I'm okay, I guess," he said with a shrug. "That's it?" the big lady asked, plonking down onto the ammo crate beside him. "I guess." Mirante frowned. "It's okay to feel sad, you know. Nobody's going to judge you for it. You and Bader were like brothers." I could still hear him screaming. "I know." Another shrug. "To be honest, I thought I'd feel worse, but I know it takes a long time to sink in with some people. At the moment, I kind of just feel guilty for not feeling too bad about it." He shook his head slowly. "Does that make sense?" "Not really," Anna replied softly, "but I guess nothing makes sense at the moment. We all deal with this stuff in our own ways." "What, like making the rounds? Offering words of support to everybody else so you don't have to think about it yourself?" Mirante's eyes flashed with anger, and she looked hurt. "Well, fuck you then," she said too loudly. Markovic snorted himself awake, looked around dumbly, then fell asleep again. I don't mean it like that," Kinney said in a placating tone. "I just mean, I realise what you're doing. You don't have to be the strong lady all the time." Anna looked down, then sighed. "I do," she said. "I'm a squad leader." She jumped up and patted Kinney on the arm. "I'm going to bed. Don't be too hard on yourself." "Same to you, Corporal." "Anna," Kronig said as she turned to leave. Both Kinney and Mirante looked alarmed before she responded warily. People needed to stop sneaking up on each other. "Jack?" The sergeant nodded at her before addressing Kinney.
"Private Kinney."
Even when speaking softly, the sergeant seemed to growl with malice. The man had been supervising a tired tech to fit extra weapons onto the Not a Mog. D-99 now sported a diamond circular saw blade and a hydraulic claw arm, piggybacked onto his powered gauntlets. Illegal close combat mods were now a thing, apparently. He had also swapped his tertiary rocket pod for an 84mm recoilless rifle. It was old tech, a short-barreled, ugly thing, and Kinney had been intrigued. Kronig had explained that it was a close-quarter battle mod, utilizing implosion shells to utterly ruin targets within close proximity. Kronig called it a donkey, on account of how hard it kicked. Kinney had never met a donkey, and didn't want to. To Kinney, it sounded like a shotgun from the seventh hell. "Sergeant," he replied, blinking tired eyes. Kinney had seen the bizarre interaction between the camp base and Sergeant Kronig about an hour before. He couldn't hear what had been said, but the body language was some of the strangest he'd ever witnessed. The two men clearly knew each other, well enough to make the grim old bugger lighten up for a bit. Kinney had seen what lay beneath the surface of his squad leader, and it altered his perception more than an entire night of fighting. He is human after all.
"Get some sleep," Kronig said simply.
He had a point. It was soldier basics, taught informally back in depot, before infantry training, before selection for MOG school. It was a fundamental part of being a soldier. When you stop, sleep. You don't know when you'll get the chance again. And Kinney was damn tired. He looked around at the prone forms of his comrades, some snoring softly, some quiet, using bunched-up survival vests as pillows. Braga was curled up in the fetal position, so still and silent that he appeared to be dead. Markovitch lay next to him, snoring like a tank engine with a blown exhaust. How the hell he didn't wake anyone up, Kinney couldn't tell, but that wasn't the reason he couldn't sleep.
I don't want to dream, Sergeant.
The squad leader stared at him for the longest time. Kinney tried to find something, anything, in that gaze, but he just couldn't read the man. The defences were back up.
Don't worry about the dreams, he said finally. They come later. Years later.
Kinney nodded.
Get some sleep, repeated Kronig, before turning to walk away.
Kinney laid his head down onto his survival vest and succumbed to fatigue immediately. He didn't dream.
End of part 1.